Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
A new book to tell the story of Caesar is Dead. Mark Antony, the speech at the funeral galvanizes Rome. However, there is a young man listening into all of these events named Octavian. And from the death of Caesar until the rise of Augustus, a.k.a. Octavian, there is a battle between Romans that involves the queen of Egypt, the queen of the Ptolemaic Empire, Cleopatra. A new book, The War That Made the Roman Empire, Antony, Cleopatra, and Octavian at Actium. Barry Strauss, I welcome him. He's the Bomar Chair of Humanistic Studies at Cornell University. He is also my guide on these matters because I do not have the classical languages. Barry does, and he can help us understand moving between the Greek historians and the Roman historians to remember these events. Barry, congratulations and a very good evening to you. The first thing we must attend to is the source of these reports of this drama between these three, Antony, Octavian, and Cleopatra. Who left us the notes that you're working from? Good evening to you, Barry.
Good evening, John. Thanks very much for inviting me to speak to you. So in answer to your question, the first source that we turn to is Plutarch. Plutarch, a Greek living more than a century after the events that are recounted here. His life of Antony is our best single source for these events. And then secondly, a later writer, Cassius Dio, another Greek, he's from Asia Minor. He is a senator, a Roman senator, and he's living even later, so around the year 200. And he writes a encyclopedic history of Rome. Both Plutarch and Cassius Dio have access to earlier sources, some of them non-existent today. And those are our two primary sources for these events.
We introduce the major players in this drama. Marcus Antonius, Mark Antony, born 83 BC. Who was Mark Antony at the moment of the death of Caesar? What did he represent to Rome and to Caesar?
At the moment of Caesar's death, Mark Antony was one of the two consuls of the Roman Republic. And he came from, so he's a very important person, one of the highest offices. He is a lieutenant of Caesar's. He has fought for Caesar in Gaul and in the civil wars. And he comes from a noble family. He is part of the Roman nobility. So a significant, powerful, influential person.
And the family is all critical for these early years of Rome moving from republic to empire. Antonii means immediately that he has a presumption to rule or to possess or to speak for the empire, quite different from, say, a senator who might have bought influence with his riches. We presume that Antonia and the Julians, Julius Caesar, represent something to aspire to, but also a presumption of royalty. Is that correct, Barry?
Yes, these are nobles, and Rome is a very hierarchical, class-conscious society. The Roman nobility is a tiny group of people at the very apex of the social pyramid. Those who are members of the nobility have a sense of their authority, their heritage, their right to rule, and Roman people as well would look up to them. They wouldn't always agree with them, but they certainly respect their noble heritage.
Octavian, whom we also know as Caesar Augustus after his triumph over Antony and Cleopatra, he is not the same level as Mark Antony, his family. He's an equestrian family. They represent certainly success in Roman society, but a step down from Mark Antony. Is that fair, Professor?
Yes, except that his family had made it into the Senate by this point. But his father's side were not members of the Roman nobility. They are powerful, important, influential, but a real step down from the Antonii, say. However, as by virtue of his mother's mother, he is a relative of Julius Caesar. He is Julius Caesar's great nephew. He is the son of the daughter of Caesar's sister. To many Romans, that would have been big deal. You're not really a member of the nobility. But Gaius Octavius, as he was born, and his mother wanted to parlay this into something greater.
He's 20 years younger than Mark Antony. Note that.
Yes.
He's also, as you introduce him, a slight and diminutive man compared to Mark Antony's presentation from his statues as muscular and vigorous, and an experienced veteran fighter. Octavian was never a warrior. Is that correct, Professor?
Yeah, I mean, Octavian did go into battle. He did fight on the battlefield, but he was never a great warrior, and he was certainly never a great battlefield commander. His talents lay elsewhere.
The first triumvirate was Caesar, Pompey, and Crassus. That is gone now. Caesar's dead. Pompey's dead, Crassus is dead. The second triumvirate is important because we have an empire that still wants to be a republic. It goes back and forth. It's flipping day by day. And Octavian is Caesar's heir by Caesar's wish. He adopted him, which has the weight of law. Mark Antony, of course, is the man who was second to Caesar and is seen as a natural transition to ruling the empire. And Lepidus, the third member of the triumvirate, who is he?
So Marcus Lepidus is, like Antony, he is one of Caesar's lieutenants, and he is a very strong supporter of Caesar, but he doesn't have the political power or the influence of either Mark Antony or, as it turns out, young Octavian, who turns out to have a lot of political power as well. He's definitely the third member of the triumvirate.
The triumvirate has a job to do, which is to defeat and punish the assassins of Julius Caesar. That ends with the battle successful at Philippi in 42 BC, 2 years later.
Yes.
Who is given credit for that victory?
Antony is given credit for the victory. Antony and Octavian were both there, but it's clear that Antony plays the major role. In fact, Octavian, for a lot of the battle, has fled from the battlefield. One source says he was sick. Another source says that he saw a vision that he was going to be captured by the enemy, so he went off to safety. So it's Antony who comes out as the hero of the victory at Philippi.
And there's a puzzle here, Barry. Yeah. Again, the sources favor always Octavian because he becomes Augustus and everybody is acknowledging the divine Augustus throughout the length of the Roman Empire. Heck, they still do it, Barry. Fine.
Yeah.
So how is it that we get a portrait of Octavian that is not successful and Antony being emphasized? This seems a contradiction.
That's a great question. Well, for one thing, we have other sources. We have a very important source for this period that disappears later, and that is Cicero. Actually, no, we don't have. Do we have Cicero? No, we don't have. We don't have Cicero. Excuse me. That's really an interesting. That is really an interesting question, and I would say that the sources are honest enough to portray and to give Antony his credit at Philippi. Octavian didn't have complete information dominance over this in this period.
Although you note that Philippi goes one way or another if Cassius doesn't commit suicide. You note that.
And that's right.
Brutus then also commits suicide, making Antony a victor over two men who were less than vigorous.
Well, Cassius was a great general. So there are really two battles at Philippi. And Cassius was a great general. If he hadn't gotten the false information that he was losing the battle and committed suicide, then things might have gone very differently. The assassins might have won the battle and totally changed the course of Roman history. But he did commit suicide. Defeating Brutus in the second battle was not nearly as difficult because Brutus, like Octavian, was never a great battlefield commander. He wasn't nearly the general that Cassius had been.
All right. It's now 42 BC. And if you're coming from Mars and looking at how the Roman Empire is possessing Antony is all powerful. He's the right family, the right time, the right temperament, the right pedigree, and he wins and he defeats the assassins. And Octavian is a sidebar, a note of history. But you emphasize Octavian had one thing that comes again and again. He was really ambitious. And the ambition overwhelms every page you have him on. He is a pounding, cynical man.
Yeah, he is absolutely as ambitious as they come, but he also is as cunning as they come. He is Machiavellian before Machiavelli. And I think that Julius Caesar saw this in him as a young man and educated him in the dark arts of power. And he always had this over Antony. Antony was not a fool by any means. But I think that Octavian was a cut above him when he came to the political game and the power game.
All right, we need to bring in the heroine of this drama, or what you say, the femme fatale of the film noir that Barry tells us, Cleopatra, when we come back. This is Barry Strauss. The new book is The War That Made the Roman Empire, Antony, Cleopatra, and Octavian at Actium. It is now 41 BCE, and here comes the star, steals every scene. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to lifelock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.
Hey everyone, this is Carrie Champion, the host of Naked Sports.
The all-new 2025 Nissan Armada Pro4X provides freedom. Freedom to explore, to go wherever you want, with your whole crew and all your toys. With a twin-turbo V6 engine, 8,500 pounds of towing capacity, and seating for eight, this unshakable fortress of a vehicle is built to take you on your next adventure. Drive the all-new 2025 Nissan Armada today. Learn more at NissanUSA.com. Intelligent four-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
This message is sponsored by Greenlight. With school out, summer is the perfect time to teach our kids real-world money skills they'll use forever. Greenlight is a debit card and the number one family finance and safety app used by millions of families, helping kids learn how to save, invest, and spend wisely. Parents can send their kids money and track their spending and saving, while kids build money confidence and skills in fun ways. Start your risk-free Greenlight trial today at greenlight.com/iHeart. That's greenlight.com/iHeart.